Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, where we get you all caught up on the political news of last week and preview our week ahead. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Joining me at the square-ish table is Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Welcome back, Jesse.
Thanks. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Natalie Fahmy, State House reporter for NBC4.
Always great to be here.
And Danny Eldridge, reporter for the Hannah News Service. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Springfield, Ohio continues to dominate national headlines after former President Donald Trump claimed Haitian immigrants were stealing and eating people's pets. That is not true. One woman who reported her cat missing says Miss Sassy turned up unharmed a few days later. Another woman who posted to Facebook now says she had no firsthand knowledge of people eating pets and regrets sharing the rumor. And the man who claimed at a city hall meeting that Haitians were eating and killing ducks in the park had no firsthand knowledge either. ODNR says they found no evidence for the claim. What is true, Jesse, is the national spotlight is on Springfield, and there have been bomb threats, added security around town. We've even sent in members of Ohio State Police. There are real threats from unsubstantiated rumors, essentially.
Yeah, so I think the heart of this is a discussion. Well, there's a few hearts of this. One heart of it is a discussion about immigration policy in the United States and how it affects towns like Ohio. There's been about 15,000 to 20,000 more people living in Springfield, which is a town about 60,000 people. So that's not an insubstantial increase of individuals into an area. These are people who are here legally, which is important to say. And so I think there are some growing pains for more people living in the city. But by most accounts, Springfield was handling this. They were seeking more federal and state assistance for, the funding to help with, for example, like schools might need more individuals who can speak the language or for driving courses. So there were like actual issues here. And then what has really ballooned into the national conversation are these almost like fake issues about cats and geese and so forth. And that's what's really getting the most attention. And it's just really interesting to see kind of the anatomy of how this has spread from different social media accounts. My colleagues down at the Cincinnati Inquirer did a really good piece just kind of breaking down how this spread and amplified more and more and more to the point where it's being discussed on a national political debate.
Yeah, Natalie, there are legitimate concerns in Springfield. You know, the number of students who do not speak English as their first language has gone, I think, from about 200 to 1,000 students. There's a need for a lot more translators at all levels of city service. And I guess Haitian Creole is not a common language that a lot of translators speak. So, I mean, there are legitimate growing pains in Springfield.
Yeah, and I think that's something Governor Mike DeWine, for example, he acknowledged it. He said, we've been working with Springfield for a while now to get more resources to them, whether it's in healthcare to make sure everybody has access to healthcare or getting those translators. It's something that everyone acknowledges that there are real problems because, like Jesse said, you're adding so many people to a town that's otherwise pretty small. So there's going to be growing pains. The question is just, how is that going to be handled? And so the problems are real. They're just not eating pets.
Governor Mike DeWine tried to reassure folks in Springfield during a recent visit. Here's what he had to say.
So I want to say to the parents in Springfield, these hoaxes, these threats have all been hoaxes. None of them have panned out. We have people, unfortunately, overseas who are taking these actions. Some of them are coming from one particular country. We think that this is, one more opportunity to mess with the United States, and they're continuing to do that. So we cannot let the bad guys win. Our schools must remain open. They are going to remain open, but to ensure parents that their child is safe, which every parent has every right to believe and to know, we're taking this absolutely extraordinary and extra step to make sure that we have patrol there and that they do sweeps every single day, whether we receive bomb threats or whether we do not receive bomb threats.
Danny, the tension in Springfield might ratchet up here soon because former President Donald Trump says he may visit in the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's what he said during a recent campaign stop. I know the mayor of Springfield, who is a Republican, has said he would prefer that neither Trump nor Harris visit at this time because of a lack of resources. So I guess we'll see if Trump's campaign listens to that suggestion or not. As of right now, I haven't heard anything different that he is not planning to come. So
yeah, he hasn't released a date or a location. There's been nothing definitive. But you're all right that Springfield's mayor, Rob Rue, thinks it's a bad idea. Here's what he had to say about a presidential campaign visit.
We did not have threats 7 days ago. We did not have these concerns 7 days ago. We did not have these hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars spent in Springfield and from the state of Ohio support 7 days ago. We do today. We'd like those that on the national stage that can bring peace, that could tamper their words and speak truth. That's what we're Springfield is asking. We need peace. We need help, not hate.
Natalie, I do expect that Springfield will come up in the vice presidential debate on October 1st because J.D. Vance was one of the first people who shared that cat rumor.
Yeah, I don't think that this is going to go away anytime soon. I guess it's a matter of how they're going to handle the conversation, because like Jesse said, at the end of the day, they're kind of turning this into the immigration conversation. And, you know, the way to get people riled up and get the base excited is to talk about stories like that, that they can like kind of cling on to. So I don't see this story going away anytime soon, unless, you know, a story from another community comes out that, you know, might help with their immigration debate a little bit more. But yeah, J.D. Vance was one of the original elevators of this story about eating the pet. So it will be interesting to see how he talks about it.
We're going to move on to another topic, but what's happening in Springfield is worthy of further discussion. Tomorrow's show is going to be all about what's happening there. We're going to separate facts from fiction, learn how the Haitians came to be in Springfield, and what people there actually need to help with the influx of immigrants. Springfield isn't the only place in Ohio receiving threats. The Ohio Secretary of State's office got a package with a powdery substance. Ohio's office was one of 15 nationwide that received one of these packages. Natalie, the FBI and the U.S. Postal Service are investigating. What do we know so far?
I think as far as I know, pretty limited details. I do know that there are patrols now guarding the Secretary of State's office and home, just taking extra precautions. This is going to be a pretty heated election in 2024. We're already seeing a lot of rhetoric surrounding it. So I don't want to say it's not shocking, but, you know, their tensions are high.
Yeah. And so what we know is that there wasn't anything dangerous, I believe, in those envelopes. Whatever kind of powder it wasn't like ricin or any of the poisons that you might think of that could be deadly. And Danny, this was red states and blue states, like Colorado, California, New York, Mississippi. There doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason to who got picked.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And I know that Minnesota's Secretary of State said this is part of a unfortunate trend that's been occurring, is more threats against election officials. I mean, we saw it in the last election, and we're probably going to continue to see it this election.
Yeah, the National Association of Secretaries of State condemned it and described it as a disturbing trend in the leading up to November 5th. Jesse, I have to wonder if this is making it harder for local boards of election to recruit poll workers.
I feel like there's always a challenge in recruiting poll workers. It's a really long day. My father actually volunteers to do it. So I think there's you can kind of meet your neighbors and, you know, it's not a bad gig, but it is a long day and not everyone can take off work for election day. But it's worth noting, as everyone on the panel has said, that these jobs, especially like the county election officials and the state election officials, have been under so much more scrutiny, especially since Donald Trump was refuting the results of the 2020 elections, but also just Republicans generally and others have been really critical of election results, you know, stop the steal, stuff like that. And so there's just been a lot of attention, perhaps more so than in the past, on how elections are run. And that has added a lot more stress for both county and state election officials.
And this is your friendly reminder that the deadline to register to vote here in the state of Ohio is October 7th. So if you're not sure if you're registered, just go online and you can check. And if it doesn't come up, you probably aren't registered and you need to go ahead and do that. You can also check your address, because if you've moved your precinct, your polling, your ballot may have changed. So we've been untangling redistricting in the lead up to the November election. And the latest twist in the story was over what your ballot will say about the proposed constitutional amendment, issue one, the perpetual issue one. Jesse, can you walk us through the two competing versions of this language and what we're actually going to see in November?
Yeah, so the Ohio Ballot Board, which is maybe not something anyone has given too much attention to prior to the past few years, it's a group of five individuals, and their job is kind of bureaucratic, but they set the language for what appears on the ballot. So what was passed around when you maybe signed a petition or declined to sign a petition earlier this year, that's not the language that's going to be on the ballot. It's not the full constitutional amendment, which is what would actually apply. So this is kind of the explainer to the people who are going to the polls. And so this particular board has five people on it. Three are Republicans, two are Democrats. At this point, the Secretary of State kind of flips either way, depending on who is in charge of that position. And so that board set language for this amendment that said things like it would require gerrymandering. It had a title about kind of unelected officials. It emphasized the cost of this particular amendment. And those people who were backing issue one, the Citizens Not Politicians campaign, said that this language was wrong, inaccurate, meant to confuse voters. And so they went to the Ohio Supreme Court and said, hey, please check this language. We don't agree with it. We don't think it conforms with what the Ohio Constitution requires, which is that it be fair, accurate, not too confusing. For example, the Ohio Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision last week, which was along party lines, said that most of the language that the Republicans approved from the Ohio Ballot Board was okay, that it was fine, conformed with the Ohio Constitution's requirements, and that saying require gerrymandering was okay. They did order them to change two smaller items, so the ballot board came back, moved those things around. There was still a discussion about that at the meeting last week.
So the ballot is set. They're actually being printed. I think overseas voting started
Friday.
It already started, yeah.
Okay, so the ballot is set. It's being printed. Natalie, what has been the reaction to this ruling?
So I guess it depends who you ask, but backers of Citizens Not Politicians and Issue One are pretty much like, this is unfair. They are trying to, essentially, the Republicans on the ballot board are trying to freely campaign by putting this ballot language on and, you know, hoodwink voters is something that they said. But they think that voters will see through it and still vote in favor of Issue One. That's what supporters of Issue One say. People who are opposing Issue One are like, well, the ballot language is fair. Issue one, people don't really want to acknowledge that these are the facts of their amendment. I think, you know, when it comes down to it, it is a pretty lengthy and complicated amendment. But if you vote yes, you are voting to have a 15-person citizen-led redistricting commission. If you vote no, you prefer the status quo, which is a 7-person commission, and that's made up of elected officials, some of whom are drawing the lines that they are going to be running in.
Danny, I think the Ohio Supreme Court decision also kind of hints at the fight for control of the Ohio Supreme Court. So the four Republicans voted to keep this language in large part. The three Democrats voted against it. And the dissenting opinion was particularly snarky, and I'm going to read a quick snippet. It said, given that the members in the majority today apparently think the word boneless means you should expect bones, I'm sure it comes as no surprise that they think a constitutional amendment to ban partisan gerrymandering means require gerrymandering. So, I mean, the boneless wing decision is, it just won't die.
I mean, that is, I don't even know what to say about the boneless wing decision. I mean, it's definitely confusing that a boneless could mean that there are bones.
But it's the idea is, I think we're going to hear a lot about this in the lead up to the Supreme Court races. And clearly the minority feels as though the majority party is making incorrect choices, which, I mean, I guess always happens on Supreme Courts. But it is interesting to see that the framing of the boneless wing, Jesse, ending up in the redistricting.
Yeah, I think Ohio Supreme Court races can be hard to decide on. And Democrats think that this boneless wing decision, which has gotten, you know, national parodying and so forth, is a way to bring perhaps an esoteric election down to the voters in a way that they can understand it. So we'll see if that pays off for them. There's a lot more factors at play in this election year, in particular, the fact that Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are at the top of the ticket, that will affect these down ticket races. But, you know, might as well talk about boneless wings if you can, I suppose.
And speaking of former President Donald Trump, he has come out against issue one, saying that Ohioans should vote no. And I always wonder how much endorsements matter, but maybe this one does.
It's one of those things. Former President Donald Trump's endorsement has been critical to recent Senate races. So it's worth noting that he's still very popular in the state, is polling ahead in the state, is expected to win it in November. Again, we've had a lot less polling than we normally do as a less swing state than we have been in the past. So his support is always important. It was interesting. It was posted on a Saturday. Probably a lot of people were watching football, at least I was. It was on Truth Social versus X or Twitter. I didn't get a press release. I might have missed it in my inbox. So it was just an interesting rollout of it. But you saw Republican elected officials in Ohio amplifying
very quickly,
it,
yeah,
and like making sure the word got out.
Coming up, whether we should change that ballot board in the wake of issue one. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we talk all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us are Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, Natalie Fahmy, state house reporter for NBC4, and Danny Eldridge, reporter for Hannah News Service. So earlier we were talking about the Ohio ballot board, which is where we set the language for all of the amendments and changes to state law that we vote upon as Ohioans. It might sound like a boring bureaucratic place, but it's been the site of a lot of controversy, both with the abortion amendment last year and the redistricting amendment this year. So Ohio Democrats now say it's time to change how the ballot board works. That the group of politicians who decide on this language appears to not be working for the people. Here's what they had to say.
And I don't say this lightly, but the recent conduct of the Secretary of State as the ballot board chair speaks for itself. Secretary LaRose has admitted to working with anti-abortion groups on last November's issue one to write the eventually approved and misleading ballot language. He bizarrely allowed in this year's issue one language that the initiative to end partisan gerrymandering, the language now says that it would require partisan gerrymandering. And he has used the tactic of running out the clock to ensure that fair and open debate on the language could not happen. This is proof that this system and the ballot board needs serious reform.
Jesse, that was House Minority Leader Allison Russo. They are proposing a change. I mean, so very late in the legislative session, any chance this goes anywhere?
Yeah, my guess would be no, in part because it's being proposed by Democrats who are in the minority in both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate, and the Republicans who are in the majority, I assume, are fine with the way the ballot board is functioning right now.
Yeah, this would make it more bipartisan, sort of give it more of an even split. I mean, the details of this are important, but Natalie, it is we have just a couple of weeks left in the year and the General Assembly.
Yeah, they're not going to come back, just for context, until after the election around mid-November, November 15th. And then there's, you know, the week of Thanksgiving that they'll be off. So really, they only have a very limited number of sessions left. And it's unlikely that a bill being introduced this late in the General Assembly will even really have a committee hearing, not to mention, like Jesse said, it's a Democratic-led bill, and Democratic-led bills like this typically don't get a whole lot of attention.
So it is interesting. The Ohio ballot board, with this redistricting measure and then last year with the abortion rights measure, has taken a more interesting role in writing ballot language. There's been a lot more pushback to the ballot language. There's been a lot more focus on the Ohio ballot board than in the past. I'm not even sure if this is a meeting that I typically wrote about previously. So just the attention on this 5-member board has been really interesting. It'll be interesting whether Democrats make it a part of the 2026 elections, when there will be people running from either side for Ohio Secretary of State, which I said is like really the linchpin on this 5-member board.
Well, with the ballot language set, at least for this November, Danny, the Issue 1 ads have begun to hit the airwaves. And the Yes campaign has chosen an interesting person to feature in its ads, former Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh. Why is Harbaugh in ads about redistricting?
Well, Jim Harbaugh, as most people, well, most football fans know, left the University of Michigan amid a cheating scandal.
He was stealing other players' plays.
Right,
play
yes.
calls. Well, Connor Stallions was, not right. Harbaugh.
There's been some NCAA sanctions there. He was suspended for a few games, and obviously probably played it into his decision to leave for the NFL. So I guess what the Issue 1 campaign is doing is trying to tie current politicians on this current redistricting panel to Jim Harbaugh, saying that they both are cheating to help themselves retain, I don't know, to help themselves win, basically.
Yeah, Jesse, as someone who loves the Ohio State Buckeyes, like myself, it is a clever ad, at the very least.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it'll certainly hit in Central Ohio. As a person who also writes for the Cincinnati Inquirer, I'm not sure if Bearcat fans feel so strongly against Jim Harbaugh, but I suppose we'll find out. But it is part of their messaging plan to really focus on, we're going to replace a group of politicians with a group of citizens. Like Natalie was explaining, this would be a 15-member board. And I think that focus is a little bit more understandable or clean for voters than, okay, let's get into how these people are selected via a 2-judge screening panel and how the retired judges are selected. And then what happens if they can't agree? This is a pretty lengthy amendment. And so how this is explained to voters will, could determine the outcome of this vote.
Natalie, we haven't seen a lot in the way of ads from those opposing Issue 1 yet. Do we have any sense of their strategy?
Not so much. It's a group called Ohio Works, which I at least first heard about last month in the first ballot board meeting. And, you know, they don't have any money raised as of July 25th. That was when the last campaign finance report was due. So they could have money at this point. We do know that they have some yard signs that they're circulating that the Ohio Republican Party made, and they're circulating those. From what I hear from some of my sources and from people who are working on the opposition campaign, it's going to be more of a ground game than anything else. So we might not expect some big TV ads from them. But I can imagine that the Donald Trump endorsement was probably part of their plan.
Yeah, I've seen yard signs so far that say vote no to prevent gerrymandering and vote yes to end gerrymandering, Danny. So it's going to be a little confusing when both sides are like, vote this way to stop gerrymandering.
Well, and you know, and it's a common tactic when you oppose something is to make it confusing. And so in that respect, the anti-issue one campaign is winning because they're definitely confusing some people, I would imagine. So we'll, I guess we'll see how the issue one supporters counteract that and get their message out.
And next hour at 11 a.m., we're untangling issue one from start to finish. So we'll walk you through the amendment and from people who want you to vote yes and those who want you to vote no. I want to circle back to the Secretary of State's office for a minute. Frank LaRose has decided not to go after the Portage County Sheriff for comments he made on social media. So Sheriff Bruce Zukowski, I hope I said that correctly, suggested that Trump supporters collect the addresses of their neighbors who had Harris yard signs, saying that these supporters could house future immigrants if Vice President Kamala Harris wins her election. Jesse LaRose says this wasn't voter intimidation.
Yeah, I think the conversation here is the difference between voter intimidation and First Amendment rights to make political speech. Now, that's a little more complex when you're the sheriff of a county and you have arresting abilities and, you know, you could enforce more of this than, you know, if I got on Facebook, for example, and said the same thing. I have a little bit less heft behind it as just a random citizen. So I think that's something that we're going to see play out. It was interesting that they answered the question about voter intimidation. There really wasn't any like, is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? You know, there's maybe some room there to say, hey, cool it with this language without saying we're going to prosecute you for a crime. And maybe that's to come, but it'll be interesting. It's worth noting that the ACLU also issued like a warning letter to the sheriff. There could be litigation there. We're not quite sure yet.
Yeah, the American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio says they're receiving complaints about voter intimidation from voters in Portage County after the sheriff's comments. Danny, the sheriff just says he was exercising his First Amendment rights on his personal Facebook page, that he didn't post this, say, on the official sheriff's Facebook page. So it's just his own thoughts as his own private citizen.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's one argument, but you're still the sheriff. I mean, I know that this is and that does have some weight if, you know, some people could feel intimidated by that. And I know I was reading in the Akron Beacon Journal that the Portage County Board of Election dropped the sheriff's office from their election security team. Hmm. So they're, and they don't know for sure that they might have to hire a private service or ask a city police department to handle it. But I think they've gotten enough complaints that seeing a sheriff's deputy in there may cause people to feel uncomfortable and not want to vote.
But I think it's really interesting about rhetoric this election season of we've really seen the pendulum swing. So before the first Trump assassination attempt, rhetoric was really, really high. And then after that, even, you know, everyone was kind of calling for a cool down of the rhetoric. And then we saw the J.D. Vance rally, a state senator said, you know, if Trump doesn't win, there's going to be a civil war. And then he quickly apologized for that. And I feel like now we're kind of back at this really heightened rhetoric now that we're getting closer to the start of early voting and closer to the election. And, you know, things might look a little closer than people, you know, may have thought before or whatever it may be. It's just really interesting to see how the rhetoric kind of calmed down for maybe a week or two, and now we're kind of back in full swing.
Portage County Commissioner Tony Badalamenti, I hope I said that correctly, has resigned from the county's Republican Central Committee following the sheriff's post. Here's what he had to say.
I believe that if you're a Democrat or Republican and I'm opposite, it's your choice, and I should have the free right and will, without being intimidated, that I can share my beliefs or have a belief in whatever I do.
Yeah, so he's a Republican Central Committee member, and he's resigning. So it's interesting to see there are some people saying, hey, even if that was free speech, it went a little far for their taste. But you're right. I mean, we're not even in October yet, so the rhetoric has only one way to go, and that's up.
You know, we're still waiting for the October surprise, too, so.
Oh, my God. I mean, at this point, it's like an every month surprise. So we'll just see what next month holds. And while we're on the topic of things posted to the internet, Senator J.D. Vance asked an Ohio State professor to remove an old blog post where he criticized Republicans on immigration. The timeline here is Vance wrote this post called A Blueprint for the GOP after the 2012 election, so it's been a minute. He asked the professor to delete it in 2016 because Vance wanted to get a job in Republican politics. The professor did delete it, but as anything posted to the internet, copies of it remained on Internet Archive sites. So, Natalie, what was in the blueprint?
So, from what I know, he was just kind of criticizing the way that the GOP was handling the immigration policy and debate. And he, you know, I think a complete 180 from the way he's talking about it now. So if, I mean, it still is on the internet. I was going to say if it was still on the internet, it would be like, oh, wow, he's really changed his tune on this. But he has, so.
Yeah, he wrote the belief that the government could deport millions of people, quote, fails to pass the laugh test. So very different from how he feels about deporting people now. A spokesperson for his campaign said that his views on deportations have changed since the time of the blog post. And I mean, Jesse, it has been 12 years. I mean, he was 28 when he wrote this. He's 40 now. Sometimes people change their minds.
Yeah, so I think that is one explanation for it. People are allowed to evolve on their positions based on new information. On the other hand, I think critics of J.D. Vance would say this is not the first time he's changed his position on something really critical to his politics. It's well documented that he was opposing Donald Trump or, you know, had some choice words to say about Donald Trump back when he was promoting his book, Hillbilly Elegy, around the 2016 election and so forth. And so if you're a person who thinks, you know, J.D. Vance is a flip-flopper or inconsistent in his positions, then I think this is more evidence of that for you. If you're a supporter of J.D. Vance and you think, you know, the guy's allowed to take in new information and make a different choice, then, you know, that's where you'll fall on this particular story.
And Danny, there's also, I mean, the professor agreed to take down the blog post, which is always interesting. He wasn't a news outlet. There's no obligation to like retract or remove things. I guess he was just like, I liked Vance. I wanted to help him out. He said this was going to be a problem, so I took it down.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like a professor helping out a student. I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean,
But it does continue to live on the internet, which is a lesson I try to tell my children, which is like, even if you think you've deleted it from the internet, you haven't. Somebody will always find it.
Yeah, don't tweet is just always a good maxim, I would say.
Yeah. Coming up, why a group of churches want to help you lose your voting virginity. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Still with us are Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau, Natalie Fahmy, state house reporter for NBC4, and Danny Eldridge, reporter for Hannah News Service. It's that time of year where groups of all political persuasions are trying to get people registered to vote, and the Greater Cleveland Congregations is no exception. The coalition has launched a voter virginity campaign. You heard me right. The clergy want to help first-time voters lose their electoral virginity this November. The website, votervirginity.com, is full of all the double entendres you'd expect, like your first time won't take long and it's natural to be nervous. Jesse, I feel like at this point I've seen everything when it comes out to get out the vote now.
Yeah, this one was certainly unique. And I think, like, in some regards, it got people talking about it. There were multiple different news articles about it in the Cleveland area. So
good on them.
Perhaps.
I don't know whether it'll be effective. It's just, I mean, it is surprising, Danny, that it's a group of churches and faith-based organizations saying, let's lose your voting virginity together.
Yeah, it may not be the first group I would think of that would take this tactic. I guess, you know, they're trying to find a way to reach voters, and this is what they came up with, I guess.
I think it's difficult to reach voters, especially, you know, first-time voters. Registering to vote can be daunting, though it's not too difficult to do. If you don't really know how to, it can be pretty daunting. So kind of like a funny way to start talking about it and sparking curiosity might be kind of what they're getting at here. I don't know how effective it will be, but certainly a talker, and, you know, anything to get people talking.
Yeah, it definitely got us all talking about it, and it definitely made the rounds on social media. Yeah, there's no good segue, so I'm just going to say Bernie Moreno is apologizing to Asheville police after two of his campaign staffers were in a traffic stop that turned contentious. Natalie, can you walk us through what happened here?
So I actually might defer this one to someone else. I know kind of the bullet point details of it, but not super.
So the basics of it was there was an arrest in Pickaway County of, well, maybe not an arrest, like a stop, a traffic stop.
On suspicion of drunk driving.
On suspicion of drunk driving of two staffers at the time of Bernie Moreno's campaign. And one of them, Mr. Henson, was, you know, expressing his displeasure with this to the police officer at the time. He has since been left the Moreno campaign, and Moreno has apologized to the law enforcement officers involved, saying that, you know, he respects police and respects the process of police investigations. It'll be interesting whether anything else comes out of this. There's a decent amount of videos, so I imagine that will work its way through the court case and so forth. But certainly right before an election, this is not necessarily the news you want, before a tight Senate race between Mr. Moreno and the current incumbent Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown.
Yeah. So Abby Wright was another member of his campaign, and she was the one who was driving. She was cited for operating a vehicle while impaired, driving without a valid license, expired tags on her vehicle, and failure to yield at a stop sign. So she got a little litany of charges. I believe she's pled down to some lesser charges now. But Colton, the one that we all can see on the body cam video, resigned. A spokesman for Moreno's campaign said, "Respect for law enforcement is a core value of our campaign, and because Mr. Henson's behavior did not meet that standard, he has resigned his position." They also said that Bernie has personally called the law enforcement officers involved to apologize. So definitely not what you want to see. Whether it would sway anybody's vote, I don't know.
Also really interesting that last Friday he had a whole entire press conference with a bunch of sheriffs and, you know, talking about how the sheriffs support him and he has more support from sheriffs. So might it be connected? Maybe. But still, he's getting support of law enforcement across the state.
Yeah, Danny, it certainly sounds like he handled this very quickly. The guy resigned. Bernie apologized both to the public, to law enforcement, and to the officers. I feel, you know, in terms of campaign like scandals, he handled it like exactly the way you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing probably for them to do is just take care of it as quickly as possible and move on and try to move it.
Ohio election officials are investigating a group registering voters after several of their submissions turned out to be fraudulent. The firm is called Black Fork Strategies, and they have canvassers who get paid to register people to vote. The Franklin County Board of Elections here says all four of the challenges to voter registrations that they handled in July were people registered by Black Fork, and they've had 11 challenges this year. So, Jesse, you know, 11, 4, these are small numbers in terms of voter registration, but it does sound like perhaps there is something incorrect about the way Black Fork is registering people to vote in this election?
I mean, at least according to that small sample size of investigation, that appears to be the case. And it's worth noting that you can go online, you can to the Ohio Secretary of State's website, or like the vote.ohio.gov, I believe, and you can look up your voter registration. You can get a form online. So it is something that you can do on your own versus like through third party groups if you're just a little nervous about whether that's going to get to the right location. There's also ways to like track where your mail-in ballot is online once we get started with early voting. So there's just a lot of ways that you can do this without potentially involving another party.
Yeah, the Columbus Dispatch actually has a pretty excellent article explaining what happened. So there was a woman who got a voter registration for somebody who did not live at her house. And she was like, hey, I don't know who this is, but they don't live here. And that seems to be what's happening. So if you get a weird voter registration for someone who you know doesn't live in your house, it's worth turning over to the Franklin County Board of Elections. The Franklin County Prosecutor's Office is investigating, and that's basically, I guess, what you do with that.
Pretty much. And again,
it would be strange. I'd be like, who the heck is this guy?
Just to reiterate, cases of voter fraud, especially in Ohio, are exceedingly exceptionally rare. So it's not something to be too worried about. Things like ballot harvesting, voter fraud, people who shouldn't be registered being registered. That's all very rare. Even the Secretary of State says so. The Attorney General says so. So, yes, weird things can happen, but not too often.
Yeah, and we don't yet know what this was. I mean, as somebody who's seen some of this before from canvassers in other states, my sneaking suspicion, perhaps, is that they were filling out, because they get paid per registration, they may have just been filling them out fraudulently themselves, not that people were trying to fraudulently vote. Not that that's okay. Not that you should do that if you're somebody who's being paid to register to people to vote, but sometimes you see canvassers pad their numbers.
Right.
So we'll have to wait and see. Danny, you had a story about the drought. So we got a little rain last night, which was awesome, but we have not had much rain at all. In fact, last week we did a show about the drought and its impact, particularly in southeastern Ohio. You wrote about a mental health survey of farmers. Can you tell us a little bit about what they're feeling?
Yeah, there's a survey, and then also Senator Brown also did a press conference with members of the Ohio Farm Bureau talking about the drought as well. And I know that they talked about how this situation is affecting their mental health. So just to kind of tie it to that, obviously the survey was conducted before the drought. But I guess what we kind of learned from that is that most farmers are report being having pretty strong mental health. But the one concerning finding was that of people who thought they did need help, about 50% did not receive it for one reason or another. Either that they thought it'd be too expensive, or that even with insurance, or that people wouldn't understand their issues.
And it should be noted that I believe Franklin County is still under a fire ban, which means no roasting marshmallows in your backyard, people, no bonfires. Even though we've had some rain, I don't know when that will be lifted, but there's, 28 counties that are still under that fire ban. So know where you go and where you can't light a fire.
Yeah, it's interesting. And even just like whether you can grill with an electric versus charcoal, it's worth looking up with like the fire marshal and the different reporting agencies. Just driving through Ohio last weekend, you can tell like it's none of the grass is green. So and obviously that's the smallest of the impacts, like the impact on farmers and their crops and, you know, supply going forward is going to be even more impactful than whether or not my grass is green.
Yeah, actually, the Columbus Dispatch, again, had a pretty good article about what you can and can't do outside with fire. So definitely check it out before you do anything outside that involves an open flame. The pension plan for Ohio teachers is in the news again. The board that decides how to invest billions in teacher retirement voted Friday to fire its longtime executive director, Bill Neville. Danny, this has been a long time coming. He was placed on leave almost a year ago.
Yes, this has been, I mean, pretty much every single STRS board meeting, people who report on this have been waiting to see if this was going to happen. It was a possibility at every single board meeting.
Neville was accused of misconduct, harassment, different, like, various bad acts in this anonymous letter about a year ago. And then there was an independent investigation. And if I'm remembering correctly, Jesse, they didn't find any evidence of these acts in the investigation.
Yeah, so the investigation was not substantiated.
And it was independent counsel, right? Okay, we'll say it.
So
somebody investigated, they found no evidence that this letter was true.
And then basically he's been on paid leave for the past 10 months. So it was a pretty substantive period of time where he was getting paid to not work. And so, like Danny said, this has been kind of hanging over STRS for a while. There's been an internal fight among the STRS board about how things have been handled there, including, you know, cost of living adjustments has been a big topic of debate, but also just like how the fund is managed. And there is kind of like these reformers versus the old guard that have been there. And that kind of back and forth has really underscored most of the conversations that this board has had in recent months.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just an ongoing issue. They're fighting over, I believe it's $60 or $70 billion that the STRS pension controls. It is a lot of money. And the fees that investment companies make off that is not chump change. So there's a real fight over who should invest the money, who should be making money off of those investments. And the board, Danny, remains divided on these issues.
Yeah. I mean,
if you follow it and
you listen to some board meetings, there's definitely a lot of disagreement among members on how to move forward. And there's other, you know, as we've reported, you know, there are other issues with STRS that are being investigated.
Yeah, and even getting rid of Neville, that was a nearly unanimous decision. They had one person who abstained, but they took another vote that day about some of like the senior staff, and that ended up being a 5-5 vote. So they really kind of were that divided on whether there was a vote of confidence or lack of confidence in these senior staff members as well. So
that included the acting director as well.
Yeah,
that almost was.
So I don't expect things to be like kumbaya at STRS board anytime soon.
Yeah. Jesse, you had a story on statewide guidance on cybersecurity. We've had a number of municipalities struggle with cyber attacks, like the city of Columbus and Cleveland, but there's no statewide guidance on this, is there?
Yeah, so the way the state gets involved in this is either they do some trainings and they've been focusing on the county level, particularly these smaller counties that might have less like IT bandwidth per se, or on the back end, like after you've been attacked, there's this group of Ohio cyber experts who are almost like volunteers who can rush into a city and help you, you know, shut things down, investigate what the problems are, etc. And so, but you're not required to call them. It's really up to you whether you decide to or not. And for example, Cleveland called this Ohio cyber group almost immediately. They were there within 24 hours. The city of Columbus called them 3 weeks after the initial attack happened. And Columbus says, you know, they had another agency that they were working with that knew the city better. And so they didn't want to call the state in right away. But just in those two instances, you're seeing just a wide disparity in how these are handled. And these ransomware attacks have become, you know, quite prolific.
Yeah. I don't think cyber attacks on cities are going away anytime soon.
No, I think cyber criminals see at least some of them as soft targets, and particularly if they haven't had the funding to invest in this or haven't prioritized investing in this, among the many, many other things that they have to decide to invest in, it can be there are real implications for both the personal information of staff, but also people who do business with the city.
Yeah, that was one of the questions here in Columbus, right? It was, did they get police information? There's particular questions about undercover cops, whether their identities had been compromised. There's a lot of personal sensitive information that cities hold on to, including our social security numbers, our tax information. So, yeah, the city has a lot of data that you wouldn't want getting out.
And even if you go and like offer a comment or like go to do business at City Hall, it's my understanding, you know, you
name, address,
and so forth. And so if you are concerned that your personal information might have been compromised, it's worth checking your credit score. It's worth potentially submitting a report if you are concerned about that. So
that was Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter for the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Natalie Fahmy, State House reporter for NBC4.
Great to be here.
And Danny Eldridge, reporter for HANA News Service.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.